Welcome to Metanoia. Our guest today is John Gregory Toews. He's the CEO and head reverend of Astara, a nonprofit, non-denominational spiritual organization dedicated to healing and enlightenment by blending Eastern and Western spiritual philosophies and traditions for practical daily living. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure. Full disclosure, I was a member of Astara years ago. Very, very helpful. In fact, I showed you before we came on the air. I still have all my degree one life lessons, and I got into the beginning of the second degree. Nice. So as we start, tell us about yourself. Give us some of your background. Obviously, you're a truth seeker, so tell us how that whole process played out in your life and how it has brought you to where you are today.
Well, you know, I started off when I was younger, going to like Catholic church and going to Catholic schools there for a little bit, and was an altar boy. And, you know, there was always that kind of pursuit to find something that was, you know, closer to God or closer to a path. You know, I think when I was young, I wasn't quite sure what I was looking for, but I was looking for something that helped me connect to something deep with inside myself. And as time went by, you know, growing up in a church and everything was okay, but I was wanting something more. And so I started kind of delving into things like Buddhism and Hinduism, shamanic practices, when I was about a freshman in high school, and started actually receiving some instruction in shamanic practices during high school. And then shortly after that, I kind of gave it all up for a little while out of frustration. And then, you know, through some health issues in my early 20s, I doubled down and started searching again. And so I started traveling with a medicine man from South Dakota. He was from the Lakota tradition. Mm-hmm. There is a gentleman that lives in New Mexico who is a fire dancer. And he's had many spiritual teachers, a very developed soul. And they were a great kind of springboard into this whole other realm. And after a period of time, I became a direct student of a person named Satguru Choa Kok Sui, who was the modern day founder of Pranic Healing and Arhatic Yoga, which is like a synthesis of yogas. And that really laid a great foundation for my spiritual practice in my normal everyday life. The thing that he drew upon for the practices was Astara. And, you know, here, so many years later, I'm running Astara and the head minister of Astara, but Astara laid the foundation for the information that he presented to the general public. And so it kind of was a nice, like, thing where it came full circle with things that really had impacted me. I was able to do for a while, you know, as a teacher for Pranic Healing for quite a while, and taught their meditations and things. And then as time went by, you know, I was looking for something different or something more, and ended up with Astara. So, yeah.
All right. Well, give us some background of Astara. Tell us how it came to be and what it is. Give us a synopsis, because we're going to talk about what you do and give people an opportunity to go to give your website and give some more information about it. But tell us what it is.
So Astara is a modern day mystery school based on ancient practices. And really, it's based on a series of life degree lessons that was channeled by Elaine Chaney, who is the founder. She did the first book back in 1951, and then over a period of time, there ended up being seven editions of this degree lesson books. And then later, her husband, Robert Chaney, did also an eighth degree lesson, actually eighth and a partial like ninth degree. And so these lay down the mechanics for basically a spiritual practice that is very inclusive because it's not about trying to convert somebody to something or you know, even putting a practice in forth. You know, basically with Astara, we're talking about the mechanics for looking within and spiritual growth. And you can kind of tailor make this to wherever you are on the path. If it's somebody who's new and just kind of dabbling, you can kind of draw upon some of the teachings and go from there. And if you're a student who is really wanting to go deep and really take it and run with it, the information is there so you can kind of build your own spiritual practice. Some of it is meditation, but you don't have to do meditation to do the practice. You know, in the Hindu tradition, there's a thing called Jnana Yoga, which is basically spiritual development based on study of spiritual truths that are highly, highly accurate. And so by going through and studying the degree lessons, the energy or the light of the mental body is very similar to the light of the soul. And so as you sit and study spiritual truths, you're kind of allowing the light of the soul and the light of the mental body to begin to mix at a much more rapid rate. And then it starts to affect all the other centers in the different bodies. And so going through the mental body is a really great way to tap into the energy of the higher soul, or what we would call the white light. You know, the white light is the foundation for then eventually cultivating divine love and divine power or creative destruction. But, you know, the entry point is the divine light.
Now you mentioned the word spiritual. Mm-hmm. And you hear so much about spirituality today. And many people are confused because they're coming out of so many different traditions, so many doctrines, so much dogma. So yeah. Give us a simple definition of spirituality and why is it important?
Well, I would say spirituality, and sometimes I even step away from the term spirituality because so many people have used it for so many things. And I almost kind of like the term spirited, you know, being a spirited human being going through your normal everyday life. But spirituality would be just the search of connecting with the higher soul or to something divine that's not based on normal everyday life. You know, it does help bring peace and help give you the ability to deal with everyday life. But I think so many times with spiritual practices, people want to try to get away from everyday life. And really what we're wanting to do is turn inward, connect, have our healthy inner life, but then be able to be present in the normal everyday world and handle ourselves in ways that doesn't pull us away from the soul, or, you know, in the old Kabbalistic writings, they would refer to it as like dirtying the soul. And I think that when you look at how the books are laid out, where there's a lot of information and things to read and developing of the mental body, you know, you really have these different aspects of the mind. And the part of the mind that deals with normal everyday life is really based on your senses. And you're dealing with a lot of sensory information to go through and process and make your way in the world. But when you're starting to cultivate a spiritual practice, you're having to go beyond the mind. You're having to cultivate the intuitive mind. You know, you're having to go beyond senses and sensory information and look for something that's bigger or deeper or more subtle. And so even like the pursuit of a mystical experience or clairvoyance is a step towards going towards that part of the mind that's intuitive, that is beyond the senses. And, you know, it's not a way of getting away from the normal everyday life, but it's a way of not losing that inner part of yourselves. And there's this story that was from many years ago. And, you know, it was a thing that floated around the internet, but this is kind of like it in a nutshell. Is there was this this family, and they had about a five-year-old child, and they just had a newborn baby. And, you know, the 4 or 5-year-old kept saying, I want to talk to the baby, but I want to talk, you know, alone. I don't want anybody else in the room. You know, and the parents were a little bit like concerned, like, why do you want to talk to the baby? And, you know, they were they were uncertain because this is a new experience and they didn't know what the child was thinking or wanting. And they had baby monitors all set up and everything. So they thought, let's let this happen and let's just see what's up. And so the child goes in and kind of cuddles up to the little baby. And he says, tell me about God. I'm beginning to forget. Right. And that's so much of what happens to us, that normal everyday life, you know, that citizen that has to go out and survive in the world and, you know, pay your taxes and balance your checkbook and show up to work and socialize. All those things are fine and they're good, but they also take us away a little bit from that thing that's on the inside of us, that divinity within. And so there's lots of different ways that we can connect to it. And so with Astara, we try to offer as many different ways for people to try to connect, because not everybody's wired to meditate. Right, not everybody's wired to study. Not everybody's wired to do certain things. And so we try to offer mechanics of like, these are how things work, and allow people to kind of do a little bit of self-discovery rather than having to answer to some sort of authority or follow some dogmatic approach that is kind of rigid and not really very flexible. And so, you know, that's kind of way we look at it here at Astara.
Right. The other thing too is with your lessons, it's not about regurgitating a set of ideas or practice. Right. It's more go at your own pace, develop your own awareness and consciousness of your journey. And so I think a lot of things that you've said would trigger questions that people might have. Mm-hmm. Like you've mentioned the mind, and you mentioned the different bodies. We live in a primarily materialistic culture, and the notion of the mind and the brain is pretty much a left brain linear type structure. And so what you're talking about is cultivating a broader awareness of self. So how do you encourage people to do that who've been conditioned to see things in a very narrow, in a very materialistic and sense-oriented fashion without scaring them off?
Yeah. And that is the difficulty, you know, and it can be different for different people. And so we try to lay out as many different ways as possible. You know, there are meditations that we have that cultivate sustained awareness and stimulate the mental permanent seed in the middle of the pineal gland for bringing in light and communication with the higher soul, but also like through book study and reflection, a lot of self-reflection, and just the idea of cultivating different perspectives on yourself and the environment. And so one of the things that we do try to offer is we offer a little bit of training both through the books and through some classes that we also try to help train people to cultivate clairvoyance or intuition in their normal everyday life. And, you know, it's not so much that we think it's important that you need to be able to see colors or see the light. You know, I think that clairvoyance is great, but that aspect is not the point. The point is to actually develop the part of the intuitive mind and see beyond the senses. And even the pursuit of clairvoyance, it's great to be able to see those things, but that's still a little bit of a sensory experience, you know. And so even seeing different colors and seeing light and things like that, it's good, but there's still something beyond that. And so we try to keep gearing people to keep looking within, keep developing themselves, and still try to drag that forth in the normal everyday world, the normal everyday life. So, you know, you don't get pulled off balance. You don't get pulled off track. And, you know, given what's happened over the last 2-3 years, seems to be a little bit of a full-time job these days. You know, it's gotten crazy and you know, it probably isn't going to come down in the next month or two.
Well, that's a critical point, because you're not a monastery, you're not a monastic organization where you withdraw. What you're encouraging people is to learn how to do introspection so that they can be fully engaged in the world and life around them.
Yeah.
But you mentioned sensory. There, when you're talking about different levels, and I'll give you, well, first of all, give us your URL so people can go up and see for themselves what you offer. They can see a synopsis of the life lessons, and there's a brief synopsis of that on your website. And then we'll delve into some of the other things, like the various bodies, the various energies and frequencies that are all around us that emanate from us as a person, as an entity, as a spiritual entity.
Sure. I'll have my marketing person do that, Val. I don't do any of those things, so I wouldn't begin to know how to do those kinds of things. I'm more on the minister side. If you want to pause for a second, I can go get somebody to post that.
I can, let me see. It's Astara, Astara.
Right. .org.
.org.
Yeah.
And you can go up there. There's plenty of information. There's a synopsis and a little profile of Greg and some of the ministers and programs, what the life lessons are about and what they offer. And we'll talk about some of the things that they offer, because again, it's not about withdrawal from life. It's about and self-enlightenment, growth, a transformation, so that you and we become a better person. And by so enabling this, we will make the world a better place to live. So explain to us about the various frequencies, because you talk about the frequencies, you talk about chakra. Again, it's a blend of Eastern, Western, Native American, indigenous traditions. So explain that, because again, you know, on the temples and the ancient world, a lot of the mystery schools, the admonition was know thyself. And unfortunately, in the modern world, we don't. So explain you know, some of the things that we need to know about ourselves.
Well, you know, like what we were starting with just a minute ago, like I like the idea of first off starting with just self-reflection, because with self-reflection, that is the stepping stone to starting to have more awareness, you know, more self-awareness, more inner awareness, and more awareness of the surroundings. You know, I think that sometimes the issue, especially when times get crazy or tough like they are, is, you know, we kind of look inward and we think of what we want, and then we try to get the external world to you know, adjust to us, where, you know, back in the day, they would say the reasonable man would observe the environment and then shift internally and basically put themselves in the right place at the right time. And so it comes with a lot of observation, observation of the self, observation of the environment, and adjusting themselves. Or if a situation just isn't going to work, then you say, this isn't going to work, and I need to realize about this person, this situation, and either go into it with my eyes wide open or not engage this person and do something different. And so it really is that beginning of the shift of always coming from the place of what I want, what I need, and looking at it through the eyes of higher faculties to observe and then make the adjustment. You know, one of the things that I always say is whenever I've started off to do some sort of project, you know, normal everyday life, like, you know, it could be in business or a personal goal or something, I can't think of one time where I was like, I'm inspired, I have this great idea, I'm going to put it in motion, and boom, it was successful. It usually came from me making an effort, taking a couple of gut punches, things not going well, and then I step back and I go, okay, now I have to adjust. Now I have to pull something from within myself to be able to produce this result that I was not willing to do on my own. right? I wasn't willing to do it in the beginning, but I either have to dig deep and make a shift and a change, or I'm just going to end up continuing to suffer in this situation. And so pretty much any success that I've had in my life, be it personally or in business, has become from that ability to observe the environment, observe myself, see what things I need to look at in myself, make that shift, and then, you know, put myself in the right place at the right time, make a shift, or detach and walk away and find another situation to cultivate. And so I think that's important, and it's something that we don't really learn in school, and it's not something that it's, you know, necessarily something that we just pick up from our family. It's, you know, sometimes maybe, but it's really something that you really have to cultivate on a personal level. You know, it's, you know, the shamanic healers, they, when somebody presents themselves with a condition, they observe the person, they observe what they think the issue is, and then they find it in themselves, they shift it in themselves, and then they help the person. And it's kind of that same idea of like when you're dealing with these difficulties, like even if something is irritating or annoying to you, you'll go, okay, but is that in me? Like, what? Why is that striking me in such a way? I find that in myself and go, okay, is there something I need to address? Is there something I need to shift? Is there some old trauma from the past that I need to address? And then make the shift and move forward. And so it takes it from a quantitative action, which really is based on force and breeds violence, and takes it to more of a qualitative action where you're leading by example and you're inviting reciprocation. And I think that's a very soft way. It's a very spiritual way. It's a very loving way. And loving doesn't mean being a doormat. It just means being more aware and more soft and more compassionate. And even if you have to be firm with somebody, it's not because you're trying to harm them. It's just, this needs to stop, or I need to step away. It's not out of harm. It's just out of establishing order.
Right. And it also ideally makes you more empathetic. You can understand and grasp where other people are coming from. You can feel their pain or even their joy in the positive cases. Again, we're living in a time, you mentioned the trauma in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it statistically. We're seeing it now that the mental health professionals are saying, and the pediatricians are talking about the damage has been done to the young people, the children. So how can we use the teachings of Astara to overcome this malaise that is sinking in not just in this country, but around the world because of this psychological operation that has been, that we've been targeted and we've been victimized by in terms of the negativity?
Yeah, boy, I know. Like, you know, looking back through the ages, like even in the shamanic traditions, usually there was tremendous growth and development of their philosophy and their approach and development of the practitioners, usually in times when the time was very, very difficult. And so in this time, yes, it's a difficult time, but there's also the potential for rapid spiritual growth at the same time. And as long as you keep your wits about you. And so, you know, we use some breathing techniques. One of the things that we like to use is a thing we call Lama Yoga, which is a breath of like, you know, you're basically putting your head down, inhaling with your head up, and then exhaling on your way down. And by going through and doing this, you're moving the energy from your lower centers, which are tied more to your lower nature. And by doing this breath and then exhaling down, you're starting to move the energy up to the upper centers, and you're starting to activate more of the upper centers, the heart, the area here, which is tied to the inner eye and the crown. And so for one, it makes you softer. It makes you more aware. And even if you have to be firm, you're not doing it out of hostility. You're doing it because it's what needs to be done, right? And, you know, there was this little phrase in the book by Paramahansa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi, where he says something to the effect of, to surrender the inhalation to the exhalation and the exhalation to the inhalation, and eventually the breath becomes one. And, you know, it's kind of a thing to think about, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, you sit and you play with your breath and everything, but then what he describes is basically what we are referring to as Lama Yoga. And so after he makes this comment about this, the surrendering of the breath, he says, without this cultivation of this higher awareness, one can experience the higher soul. You know, you have to master this aspect of the breath to have a deeper connection or awareness of the higher soul. And so this is just a piece of the things that we offer. You know, we don't say you need to do this meditation. We give instruction. You know, it's part of the book. We have free streaming services where we lead people through these practices. So it's just one of those things that if you want to do it, you can. And if you don't, you know, there's still other things to be done. But even through this simple practice, you're starting to cultivate aspects where your higher faculties are starting to come in. That's again beyond that sensory mind, because in this difficult time the sensory mind is so overstimulated that people have the tendency for depression, they have the tendency for anxiety, and also with the COVID related things, people are really connection starved. And, you know, yes, there's the connection with other people, but I would also say there's an interconnection that sometimes we got pulled off center and we don't have the connection to the inner self or that healthy inner practice. And so between that and the practice for clairvoyance and some of the other meditations that keep activating the heart, the crown, you know, these aspects will help you to maintain yourself in the normal everyday life. And then the teachings also help provide a perspective that's bigger than the right here, right now. You know, you really look at the bigger picture. And one of the aspects for Asara is we also help prepare people to live a good life so that when it's time to make their transition, the transition is a good, healthy transition, and it's a time of deep spiritual growth even in that moment, rather than having difficulty or fear or struggles in the time of transition. And transition can even be in normal everyday life. You know, if you think about, like, when they say accepting Christ in the heart is you're being born again, you know, there's pieces of you that are dying off. It could be the old traumas, the old fears, pieces of your personality, but to have a deeper connection to a spiritual teacher or a deity, whatever the deity is, it doesn't have to be Christ, it could be Buddha, it could be Krishna, it could be whoever, but to have a deeper connection to that aspect takes you kind of out of your head and out of the self, the body, the emotions and the mind, and helps you to start seeing something bigger than yourself. And when you start looking at perspectives like that, you really start to see even beyond the difficulties in the moment. You know, like I've had a few times where I had like a near-death experience, you know, like thought I was going to go out, and, you know, for some reason was able to, you know, miss that car or, you know, whatever it was. And I found it very, very interesting, because in that moment where you're so close to making the transition, not only was the things from your normal everyday life, not only did they not bother me in that moment, they weren't even there. They just weren't there. And that is really stepping away from that sensory part of your mind, you know, that left brain thinking, and going to that intuitive side where you're really processing more big picture soul energy and being able to come back and then have that different perspective in the normal everyday world. It's a weird thing, but like those near-death experiences were really quite the blessing that gave a perspective that I probably wouldn't have come to on my own. And being able to drag that higher perspective in normal everyday life, you know, it takes the panic out of, I need to resolve this right here, right now. I need, it's this is the way it's always going to be. When you have that higher perspective, it's like, yes, this isn't great, but it's also transient. You know, things will shift and change. Right. And around here at the office, we kind of joke when somebody's like, I'm really having a good day. We even kind of joke and say, don't worry, that'll pass too. Like it all passes. You know, the good stuff, the bad stuff, it all kind of, it's all transient.
But you touched on something that I wanted to mention. There are lessons about transition, what many people call death.
Right.
And I think you do a good job of explaining it, but explain to our viewers and listeners why confronting transition is so important. Because, and the reason I say this is because there are people who are more afraid of living than they are of dying. You know, they just haven't embraced life. They don't know. They don't know what their purpose is. They don't know what, why they're here. And right. So they're afraid of death, but only because of the confusion that they have about life.
Right. I would completely agree with that. So, you know, I would say that, like, being in a body gives you the ability to gain perspective, rapidly grow and spiritually develop as a soul. Without being in the body, I think it still happens. It happens much slower over a longer period of time. Coming in is a very beautiful experience that we can have. But like you said, difficulties, situations, or just, you know, sometimes we just come in maybe a little bit afraid. And so when you start to have that bigger picture, and we know one thing about everybody, like, you know, I might not know very much about you. You might not know very much about me. But one thing that we do know about each other, at some point, we are going to make a transition and pass away. I mean, that is something that is universal, right? And so with that, one of the things that we look at with Astara is, you know, if we can live a good life, if we can live a life, not because we want to be good and avoid bad things from happening. I mean, of course we want that. But at the same time, you know, there's that connection to that inner part of ourselves, that divinity within, that isn't about like getting somebody else's approval or following rules or fitting into a group or any of that. It's just about us. You know, when you lay down and go to sleep, it's just about you. When you lay down and you make your transition, it's just about you. And if you live a life full of fear and difficulty, you know, the thing is when you start to make your transition, or when you transition, you don't have the distractions of the life. You don't have the distractions of the body. You don't have the distractions of the emotions. And so, you know, we hear things of like judgment and things like that. And I, you know, I think it's based on more of a self-judgment. You know, you kind of evaluate yourself and judge yourself as you're transitioning, because you are starting to make your transition to having union with the higher soul. And so things that you found were difficult, things that you regretted, things that maybe you did that you knew was wrong, all of these things are now in your face, and you really have to resolve them no longer being in the body, which is a harder thing to do than trying to live a good life and connect within, so that when you make your transition, it's about just peace, and it's about union, you know, union with the higher soul, union with God, and so on. And so if you live well, you know, again, it's not about like I'm following this dogmatic attachment to something, or you only do this, you only do that. You know, you kind of use the heart as your compass. You know, you use your faculties as your compass. And when you lay down at night, you're the one that has to be okay with you, not everybody else, just you. And at the time of transition, again, it's you need to be in a place where you're okay with yourself. You're okay with a life that you lived. And, you know, we want to help people live a good life, and we want to help them to even make a transition to a higher, better place. You know, everybody eventually gets there, but we just don't want to have a lot of pit stops along the way, you know, so to speak. And the more that you kind of clean things up in life, the more that those inner experiences, be it in meditation or in transition, become much more profound and become a much deeper experience.
Well, you offer an opportunity for people who are in distress or anxious or who are not well, who are ill, mm-hmm. to reach out to you, and you provide healing and you provide distant prayer and healing.
Correct.
And believe it or not, I mean, I know you know it, but it is being confirmed scientifically that meditation, distant prayer for healing actually works. Mm-hmm. And so how does one who is in a state of stress, can they reach out to you, and will you pray for them? Will you meditate for them, and will you do distance healing for them?
Yes. The one of the things that we offer is prayer petitions, and it's not something that there's a charge or a fee. This is just something that we offer to the public, and actually with people who have become members. And once somebody becomes a member, they're always a member, and we try to reach out to them as much as we can. We even have a staff of ministers that actively reaches out to the congregation and just offers, you know, some counsel or prayers in their normal everyday life or times of difficulty. But if somebody's having some difficulties, they can submit a prayer petition either through the mail or through through the website, through digital media, or they can even call in. But digital media tends to be the thing that people use the most. And we have somebody who goes through and prays over each and every prayer petition. And then we also pray over them as a group. I do these every day. And then we also have other ministers who do it. And then we also have a volunteer staff where we have energy healers from different modalities that will go through and do healings on people, especially if there is a physical or psychological issue, a conflict with a friend, whatever it might be. We try to go through and do healings on the situation as well. And we also use the use of mantras. The mantra that we use a lot is Om Mani Padme Hum. That is basically means jewel in the blossoming lotus, which again is tied to the mental permanent seed in the center of the head, in the pineal gland. And it invokes the blessings of the spiritual elder in charge of hearing and answering prayers. And it also is a mantra that is for generating light. And so a lot of times what we do is we pray for the person, we go through and do healing on the person, we do mantra over the person, and then we also do it over the group. And if somebody needs to also talk with somebody, you know, again, they can just call in and talk to one of the ministers, and, you know, we can listen and do active healing or active prayers on the phone. And we just try to offer as many different ways as possible. You know, if we need to give them some sort of reference for some sort of guidance in their healing path, we try to do that without diagnosing things, of course, but like bringing up your point, you know, I know this doctor, and he would, you know, a couple days a week he would do surgeries and everything, and he started noticing that, like, when they would be on the table and he would start to make the first incision, like some people would bleed really super substantially, and some people, their bleeding really wasn't that bad. Like, and he would open them up and things would go really well. And some people, it just, boy, it just seemed like chaos as soon as he would open them up. And what he started doing over a period of time is he started going out and talking to the family members of the person who was in surgery. And he got to the point where he could just make that first incision and he could go, the family or a group of people have been praying for this person. And so he wouldn't, at one point he stopped asking, are you guys spiritual or religious? Have you been praying? He'd say, how long have you guys been praying for this person? And he said, every time. As soon as he would make the incision, he could see that it wouldn't be bleeding very much and the body was calm and not chaotic. He is like, somebody's been praying for this person. And so, you know, the power of prayer is very, very potent. And you know, the idea is we all have the potential to pray for ourselves, but times when we're having difficulty, sometimes we need a little extra help. You know, if you see pictures of, like, say, the Buddha or Kuan Yin, you see them sitting and they're on like kind of a double lotus, like they're sitting on a lotus like this. And that double lotus actually symbolizes the earth. It is the basically what the energy body of the earth looks like. It looks like a lotus this way and a lotus this way that's constantly going back and forth. And so when you see like a Kuan Yin or a Buddha or like Christ, their energy body is the size of the planet, which means we're constantly swimming in the energy of these great, great beings, these spiritual elders. So when we're praying, it's not that our prayer is going through some email, you know, energetic email somewhere in space and then comes back. We're constantly swimming in the energy of these great, great beings. And really what is happening when we're praying is we're just becoming a bit more conductive to those beings so that energy can penetrate to a greater degree, to a greater level. And we can do it for ourselves, but we can also do it for others. And if you see, like in the Buddhist tradition, you see sometimes the Buddha is like gold with a blue ball in the forehead area. Or you'll see what they call the medicine Buddha, who's completely blue. And then you see in the Hindu tradition, there is a lot of aspects where they have a peacock feather or they're standing next to a peacock. And if you look at the peacock feather, there's a blue ball with like a little gold kind of flame around it, right? In the Christian tradition, they'll say, make your eye as one and your body will be filled with light. And so that is all referring to what we would call the mental permanent seed or the blue pearl. Right, the blue pearl. And it's basically how we process information from our higher soul. And it's also the gateway to higher experiences. You know, it's like the blue pearl is the keyboard and the higher soul being the mainframe computer. You know, you have to go to the keyboard and start, you know, typing in whatever you got to do to access the big mainframe computer. And so with this, the blue pearl is really key to the development, regardless of the tradition, right? Regardless of whatever tradition it is. And if you look at the Lord Buddha developed for the sake of humanity, right? And so one of the things that happens is as your blue pearl starts to become more activated, it starts to break down ways of thinking. It starts to break down the anxieties. It starts to break down the resistance from your lower nature or your lower centers. And right. It begins to harmonize all these
things. Not just the resistance, the dominance of
that. Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Well, one of the things... address the fact a lot of people pray,
right?
But a lot of folks, in my estimation, pray, you know, like even the Bible says you have not because you ask not and you ask amiss. A lot of people come begging and they're in such a state of anxiety and stress that energy is not resonating with, as you would call it, the higher soul, the oversoul. So how should people, you talked about praying for yourself. How should people pray for themselves as well as other people, but primarily for themselves?
Yeah. You know, one of the ways that I really like this, going back to what we were talking about earlier, is I actually like to have people put their awareness on their heart. You know, the awareness on the heart. The heart has to do emotionally with other people, where the lower emotions is more the solar plexus, that area below your ribs. And that is more concerned with the self. And so first, by putting awareness on the heart, when you can get things in the heart, it helps to kind of clean things up. You know, it helps to let go of the story and get closer to the truth. It helps you to integrate something. And one of the things you could say is the heart is an amazing janitor. Like, it really cleans up the emotions, the traumas, basically it helps to transmute these emotional energies. And so a lot of times when you have a difficulty, by reflecting on the prayer and holding it in the heart, and sometimes what I have people do is, you know, I say, reflect on your prayer. And I, at some point I'll say, just let go of the words, just think of the imagery, right? Just think of the imagery with your awareness on your heart. And the idea is, because you're focusing more on imagery rather than on words, right there, you're already going to more of that intuitive part of your mind, because that part of the mind is based more on symbolism and metaphors versus the sensory mind that's going to go through all the little details. I want this, I want that, I need this, I need that, I need it to happen by Thursday, I need this, I need that. Where when you look at it from the point of view of doing it through imagery and doing it through the heart, you're beginning to stimulate the right side of the brain that makes you more conductive to that energy that we're all swimming in. And it also starts to stimulate that blue pearl that is in the center of your head. And so in the indigenous cultures, in the Lakota tradition, for example, they use a prayer pipe, and it's a modification of the Lama Yoga. Like, when they put their head down, they inhale, they hold, and then they exhale with their head up, right? And it's not so much about what they're smoking. It's about actually the movement of the head. And that movement of the head like that actually stimulates the blue pearl. And if you go to, like, the Sistine Chapel, you see in the Sistine Chapel, there's this painting where there's a big giant blue ball with a human kind of sitting on top of it, and on each side is the four archangels associated with the four directions. So Gabriel, Uriel, Michael, and Raphael. And when you're asking for help, when you're trying to be conductive, when you are trying to bring something divine into your normal everyday life, the entry point is the blue pearl. And if you think about when somebody makes a transition, where do they go? Like, in the Christian tradition, they go to the pearly gate to reach heaven. So heaven really isn't somewhere else. It's actually inside you. In the Japanese tradition, when somebody passes, they put a pearl on the inside of their mouth, because they say, this is how you enter heaven. You have to have a pearl, you know, to enter heaven. And again, it goes to this pearly gate idea, but really it's the blue pearl within the center of your head. And so the more that you can connect to that aspect, however you do it, like, it doesn't have to be through meditation, it can be through study, it can be through reflection, it could actually even be through service, through serving other people, is a very fast way to spiritually grow and evolve. And so you look at people who have done great humanitarian work, they're usually very, very developed souls. And this could even include scientists who are trying to find cures for diseases and things like this. It doesn't always have to be a mala incense sitting on the top of a mountain, you know, meditating. You know, there's a lot of good people living everyday lives, doing good things that you would never know that they were spiritual, other than you watch their works. You know, you tell the tree by the fruit that it bears.
Right. The thing that when you were speaking, I thought of the admonition, keep thine heart with all diligence, for out of it flows the issues of life. And a lot of times in the Bible, in the Old Testament, you read, lift up your heads. They're not necessarily talking about your posture, but they are talking about what you said, lifting up the head, being part of the breathing and the awareness. So there are a lot of esoteric jewels in there, but because we've been taught to be outer directed, we don't see them and we don't get this a symbolism that you're talking about.
Right.
So that becomes even another reason why Astara and some of these other agencies that do great work are so vitally important, particularly in a time right now where we could be on the cusp of world destruction.
Yeah. Like, you know, going back to what you're saying is, I think the approach of it's not about converting somebody to thinking the way you think or some sort of dogmatic, you know, philosophy or something, but really whatever tradition people are doing, just to try to help people do it better. And even if they don't have a tradition, there's still some inner sense of, you know, trying to connect within, trying to be a better person, trying to have union with the soul, you know, and it might not even be that verbiage that people use, but people want to be happy and they want to experience something that's bigger than themselves. And I think that can look a lot of different ways. And one of the things that I have been attracted to over the last 20, 25 years are just that non-dogmatic approach to, you know, something that's very inclusive and people from different traditions can get together and talk about the same thing. I liken it to this, like if there was four of us and we were all standing around and all of a sudden, you know, 500 feet away, there was a big explosion and we all witnessed it. And then we'd go home and one person would say there was a loud bang. And another one would say there was a loud boom. And the other one would say there was a loud bang. You know, everybody would have a different term to describe the same thing. And I think what happens over a period of time is we all get stuck on the words describing that explosion rather than going, look at that event, look at that thing. Like, there's different fingers pointing to God, and the goal is not to get stuck on the finger, but to focus on God. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody says it with a different accent, who cares? Like, you know, who cares? Right. Or if they call it by a different name, who cares? Right. Like, it's not about that. And I think in the normal everyday world, going back to that sensory mind, it starts to become always about resolving something, making everything the way that it looks for us, trying to get people to agree with us or not agree with us, you know, whatever it is. It's really just focusing on the things that are important. And, you know, there's that old saying, you know, to be flexible on the things that are not important and to be inflexible on the things that are important. And I would say pursuing the connection to the higher soul, bringing divine energy or divine connection into normal everyday life, that's something to be a little bit inflexible about. Like, I'm going to do it even in times of difficulty. I'm going to do it even when things are good. And when there's little skirmishes about this and that, if it's not a big deal, we let them go. We be tolerant with each other. We be compassionate with each other. And if it's not a big deal, we don't make an anthill into a mountain. You know, it's
start a war over it.
Yeah, it's easy to say. Like, sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it's you know, it can consume you a little bit, but. You know, I'd say as I've gotten older, it becomes easier and easier just to go, this is just not that big of a deal. You know, my mind would love to make it a big deal, but the lower emotions feel alive through drama. I mean, if you just really boil it down.
Right, they get energized. You know, they get energized through drama.
Yeah, and you know, that they're... I used to be a full-time healer for almost 30 years. And, I would have patients come in and they'd go, all my friends are just gossiping and it's so boring. And the drama TV shows that I like to watch, they're not interesting anymore. And I just sit around and just nothing excites me anymore. And I was like, there's a clinical name for that. And they'd go, really? And I go, yeah, it's called inner peace. It's really a hard thing. But, it is a little bit just even keeled and the bad stops affecting you and the good isn't so consuming where you're entangled even in pursuing that. It's just you're living life. You're being present in normal everyday life and good things happen and not so good things happen. And it's just this flow of in and out of that, but always looking within, and not trying to avoid the external
right. life. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Guest is John Gregory Toews, who's the CEO and the head reverend of Astara. So tell us how people can get more information about Astara, if they're intrigued, how they can join, and also how they can take advantage of your prayer and healing. We're living in an age of flux right now, and a lot of people are looking for assistance.
So we have a website, astara.org. So astara.org. And you can submit a prayer petition there. You do not have to be a member to submit a prayer petition, either for yourself or for loved ones or a friend. And sometimes we even have people submit prayer petitions for world events. There could be a shooting or, the Ukraine crisis is a very good example where we are sitting and doing public, streaming services where we're getting people together and blessing the situation in Ukraine and people that have passed or people who have injured. And, we might not know their names, but there's a lot of them. And we just try to focus the prayer, time for prayer to those areas. And so you can submit a prayer petition there. You can access degree lessons that we have available there. And if you want to join as a member, all that stuff is on the website.
If you're not a member, I saw on the website that you and some of the other ministers actually conduct, I don't want to call them sermons, but lessons. Do you have to be a member to take that?
Nope. Anybody can join. Some of them are study group sessions. Some of them are healing sessions. Some of them are meditations and further instruction on how to do some of the meditations. We do kind of a non-traditional Sunday service where we do a little kind of meditation reflection and then a little bit of a I don't want to call it a sermon, but like a little bit of a lecture for just like living in the normal everyday life. And so you do not need to be a member. We're just trying to engage people and help people on the path, regardless if you're a member or not, and regardless of where you are in your life, a new student, a new person on the path, or some of the ones that are been doing this for 30, 40 years and have a serious, strong practice, there's still that sense of community and joining in with a group. We try to offer as many different things as possible. So,
okay. All right. Well, we're just about out of time. So I want to, first of all, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be guest here on Metanoia. We wish you continued success because you're doing a great work and the world needs this work, particularly at this point in time. And also to extend an open invitation to have you to come back.
I would love that. I enjoy talking with you.
Well, and delve more into more practical applications. Again, this is not a one size fits all. I can attest to that. So we want to bring this to people's attention. It's not like it was, say, in the Middle Ages where people had to keep it under wraps because
we're
afraid of running afoul of the powers that be. We need people to understand that there are many ways and many paths to enlightenment. So we thank you, and I wish you continued success safety, health, and prosperity.
Thank you so much, Ricky. It was really enjoyable having time with you. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, we're going to have you back. So all right, we do this on a quarterly basis. So, you know, I have some other ideas for the balance of this year, but we're definitely going to have you back.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay, thank you.